Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Zeta Talk often refers to what they call the establishment, the elite, referring to those in power either through their great wealth or political position. Any control of the masses works from the top down, so it's important to understand how this is structured. Just how does this work? Who's the boss here in the establishment? Do they ever argue, or is there a rigid pecking order? Do they operate as one in total agreement? Well, not hardly. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Clash of Agendas, written November 2003. What are these agendas, and in what way do they clash? Since those in the service to other work cooperatively, and do so increasingly in emergency situations, we will address primarily the agendas of those in the service to self, as affected by increasing Earth changes. First, the puppet masters. He with the gold rules. The public assumes a broad ownership of corporations and media outlets, while the opposite is true. A very few individuals control the wealth of the world, install politicians to their pleasing, create global conflicts, and create or destroy the fortunes of countries as well as individuals in the chess games they play with their control, and thus operate as puppet masters during the cover-up. Their agenda is to retain control, retain their position, and thus as their gold rules, they want minimal impact to their financial stature. No bank failures, no drop in stock value, no corporate bankruptcies. And as they assume this would occur if knowledge of a rogue planet in the inner solar system were to be broad, they consider hiding this as long as possible of prime importance. Then there's the puppets, promised wealth, power, security, and opportunities outside of what their natural talents would afford them. Puppets invariably allow their strings to be pulled. They are chosen because they can be controlled by blackmail, by bribery, by intimidation, and if disappointed with the role they are assigned, they are alternatively threatened and placated by their puppet masters, else eliminated. Puppets run amok of their masters when they sense their world will not continue and make demands. Occasional restless puppets are expected, with alternatives waiting in the wings. But when puppets panic en masse, malfunction, are absent, and many replacements are happening simultaneously, the chess game the puppet master plays will not go as planned. Then there's the comfortable class. Accustomed to being secure due to ownership of goods and the power this brings, the upper class or moneyed class will react with more than shock when their property, whether corporate interests or stocks and bonds or real property, is flushed down the toilet during the increasing changes pummeling the earth. Insurance companies will go under when their insured base surpasses their wealth. Corporate bankruptcy will ensue when all but the corporate name has been washed or blown away, and clutching jewels and artwork, they will stand and wail. Banking empires, government security blankets, all run by puppets of the puppet masters, will receive demands to do something to return the comfortable class to their comfort, wailing all around. Then there's the working class. At the base of the pyramid, the working man and woman observe the drama. From their standpoint, they are living in the land of Oz, where nothing is as it has been pronounced. The good guys doing bad deeds, the economy recovery putting them out of their homes and jobs, and no one explaining why the sun and moon and seasons are not where they are supposed to be. The point of working for the comfortable class is for food and a roof over one's head, and when both seem tenuous, loyalty fails. The working class is thus simply not where expected to be, not the drones and robots anticipated, and the comfortable class now switches from simply wailing to panic. Insecurity translates to autocracy, so strong-arm tactics against the working class are the first armament. This, of course, backfires when cities are collapsing and the leadership proven inept. So the working class becomes the rebelling class and is absent even more. Thus, the clash of agendas going into the pole shift will mean that none of the social structure operates as expected by those in the service to self, who find their banking empires collapsing, their real and corporate properties vanishing, their puppets wandering around confused, and the comfortable class fuming about the recalcitrant working class and lack of action by the puppets running the establishment's empire. Chaos, just as the serious pole shift precursors are about to ensue. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The common man is often unaware of the fights within the establishment for control. Sometimes this becomes obvious when a coup happens, or one political party wrests control from another, but the real fighting goes on behind the scenes. It's often been said that Democrat or Republican, there is no real choice as the candidate for presidency has been hand-picked by the puppet master. True? Well, yes, according to the Zetas. And a quote from Zeta Talk, Diebold Wins, written November 2004. As the puppet master's choice was Kerry, over half the vote fraud was deflected by the puppet master's covert operations. Else the electoral win by Bush would have been 302 votes, rather than 254 with Ohio contested. But fraud on the tabulating machines was a constant battleground, thrust and parry and countermove. Thus the heat of battle allowed some Bush victories, but for a more narrow electoral outcome. The puppet master is not pleased and will enact revenge, and the puppet master has more cards than can be imagined. The mess Bush has made rests like a turd on the front steps of the White House. The spiral down into an increasingly hostile and resentful populace, a rebelling bureaucracy, and worldwide disgust will only accelerate. The U.S. will find itself without cooperation when reaching out for help to other countries in their endeavors, while the puppet master enacts financial revenge, punishing the U.S. to weaken Bush and Cheney. For this goal, he would want to weaken the Bush administration so that the U.S. looks to their commanders, and death and assassination and mass resignations in the Bush camp would create this. This would create a U.S. shattered into many local fiefdoms, the federal increasingly isolated and distrusted. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Pretty drastic moves, but per the Zetas, the puppet master has never lost a battle he set out to win and is furious at his orders having been ignored. Bush and Rove and Cheney and Rumsfeld, as puppets, thought they could establish their own fiefdom. They now found themselves on a slide into a pit. The puppet master can hardly let rebellion pass, as what kind of an example would that be to the rest of the world and his other puppets? Hasn't an angry puppet master enacted his revenge since November of 2004? Look at the situation a mere year later. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Decapitation Process, written August 2005. We stated when Bush stole the 2004 election that the puppet master was furious, as he had wanted a respected Vietnam vet, John Kerry, to bring a rebelling U.S. military into line, a situation that certainly would not occur with Bush continuing in office. Why does the puppet master care? Because the U.S. military has and is being used to protect his assets and interests at home and abroad. The massive U.S. military, equal in size to the combined military of all other countries in the world, has bases everywhere, and the man with a gun gets cooperation with U.S. interests abroad. Chosen as much for their weaknesses as any skill or political savvy they may possess, puppets are expected to allow their strings to be pulled once installed into office, but Bush and those around him had let the powers of the U.S. military go to their heads. They would be king, They would commandeer all the oil fields in the world and control what they foresee as the prime commodity in the aftertime, black gold. Bushbusting promptly began, the first volley financial. Despite all lies to the contrary, the health of the U.S. economy is plunging. More layoffs, more bankruptcies, overinflated and underfunded, and utterly dependent upon investors from abroad. What has the situation been since the 2004 election was stolen? Rising interest rates at the Federal Reserve, which the puppet master controls, while the U.S. economy plunges. Logical only when one considers that the puppet master plans to decapitate the U.S. bureaucracy and plunging the U.S. government into a financial crisis with a sudden withdrawal of funds from the Fed and from countries abroad with which he has great influence, will be one weapon at his disposal. Bush, meanwhile, having formerly been an alcoholic, is now drunk on continued spending sprees, his foray into Iraq a hemorrhage he refuses to address. Weapon one, financial disaster, with the U.S. Congress frantically looking to cut expenses in the face of the Bush administration's adamant insistence that their conquest of oil fields continue, and now into Iran. The second Bush-busting volley is unveiling political corruption within the Bush administration. Where this has not yet been seen as removing Bush from office, it has an eroding effect on the Congress and the public. Little by little, the fingers of loyalty weaken and let go. Weapon two, the changing face of Congress. The third Bush-busting volley is eroding public sentiment for what Bush had hoped would be a wartime presidency. What war? The one that was waged based on a lie? The one that was for any reason but to defend America from terrorism? The one that was to make America free from worry, a safer place? For public sentiment to erode, the media must cooperate, and anyone taking the pulse of the media lately must admit there has been a change. Look behind the newscasters to see the hand at the helm of the major media outlets. It is not Bush and company. Though they can suppress reports by asserting a national security rationale, they cannot dictate the tenor and tone of the news. Weapon three, an angry public. What is the synergy during a decapitation process between economic quagmires, congressional alarm, public disgruntlement, and the military balking? Each magnifies the other. A war effort that has strong public support does not get challenged by Congress, regardless of legalities. A feeding frenzy begins, where this has terrified some within the Bush White House. The prevailing mode has been stubborn refusal to change. This is not a resolve of strength, but the rigidity of the weak. This is a two-year-old having a tantrum, insisting on his way. Enter the role of the military. They were, of course, disappointed to have as their assigned commander-in-chief a man who avoided his duty during the Vietnam era to the extent of being AWOL in the reserves. The truth of this was not lost on the military, which has its own information channels. But the military is restrained from speaking out against a sitting commander-in-chief, so the truth of this is lost on the public. Historically, when a military turns against a king, the king has lost his footing and is doomed. What next? A Shakespearean drama is about to unfold, with the synergy of undercutting the Bush administration creating a maelstrom under him that will astonish those who thought him strong. Bush-busting, a decapitation of his influence, such that the U.S. is no longer run from the White House, but is on autopilot according to law and conscience. Such is the puppet master's plan, and there has not been a battle instigated by this puppet master that he has lost. The outcome is certain. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And where are we yet another year later, in September of 2006? And I quote from the Washington Post, GOP infighting on detainees intensifies. This is dated September 16th, 2006. An irritated Bush, raising his voice and gesturing sharply at a Rose Garden news conference, excoriated legislation passed by a Senate panel Thursday that is intended to conform U.S. detainee practices with the Geneva Conventions. The president's threat to end the interrogation program seems to make little impression on the Republican dissidents who have balked at his interpretation of the Geneva Conventions. Two of four Republicans who voted against Bush's position on Thursday again rejected his logic after the news conference, and a fifth Republican joined the rebellion against the president. The Supreme Court ruled in June that U.S. detainees fall under the Geneva Conventions, which require that wartime captives be treated humanely, and bans outrages upon personal dignity. Joining was former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who wrote in a letter that interpreting the Geneva Conventions would encourage other countries to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism. End of the quote. Clearly, the Zeta prediction for a decapitated puppet after the November 2004 election was stolen, and converse to the puppet master's wishes, came true. But regardless of who is in power, politically, the puppet master and the puppets he controls have an agenda. Many times it's the choice of the puppet, not the puppet master, as looking at Europe and Russia and Japan, as well as the U.S., one can clearly see differences in how they operate. What is the top-down plan, the puppet master-approved plan, and how is this plan tracking? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Changing Captains, written July 2003. The original plan assumed control of the world's major military powers. Losing control of the good ship USS United States is not in any plan. They want control of the White House because the U.S. military has been built up to be a power greater than the combined power of all other countries. The original plan assumed that enemies could be eliminated, resistance intimidated, the weak bribed, and the media controlled. This has proved to be the case, with resistance underreported, Congress in the U.S. and the Parliament in the U.K. becoming sheep barely bleating a complaint, and rubber-stamping Iraq invasion despite the warning signs. The power grab for the Middle East oil was considered a success. The original plan assumed that in any economic hardship, corporations could be propped up and would hold, so that leading into the cataclysms, the elite would still be comfortable perched on top of the pole, and workers in general tied to their jobs and not interested in an early escape to safe locations. The original plan assumed respect for the world's financial institutions, which the elite are so closely allied with. Had the Bush plan to pour workers' Social Security funds into Wall Street succeeded, this might today be a reality. The original plan was to have the traditional leadership in the world, elected politicians, the church, and corporate leadership, lead the common man in blinders, to remain calm and complacent up until the last days before the coming cataclysms. On the eve of the pole shift, they are about to lose the U.S. military to its internal leadership, so that it could not be counted upon to guard the elite, first and foremost, shooting down civilian populations that threaten the enclaves of the elite. They are about to lose the strongholds they thought they had secured in the Middle East, in Iraq, from whence they plan to grab the Saudi fields, as the Iraq people as a whole are about to rise up and depose the U.S. occupation, trapped in the center of their country. They are about to see the frantically propped up Dow take a steep plunge, the bottom nowhere in sight, when matters reach the point where each financial institution or investor starts going for themselves and no longer following the plan, as when the ship is obviously sinking, every rat leaving the sinking ship wants to be first. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. There were several key glitches thrown into this plan, and yes, the Zetas and other benign aliens had a hand in this. Via contactees, those humans asking how they might right wrongs of the world, they have influence. Enron was brought down because of a memo left in a copy machine and passed to the Justice Department by a secretary finding it there. Pedophilia, a key tool used to force cooperation with the plan, was exposed in the Catholic Church by numerous lawsuits, and its use within the U.S. military by a brave wife of an officer revealing his diary to the world. the operation of a plunge protection team, a means by which the Dow is maintained by delayed transactions, and the use of a military-industrial complex to fake enthusiastic buying, using the portfolios of corporations and compensating these corporations later via Department of Defense contracts, has been exposed on the Internet. The Zetas have been allowed to directly interfere with the plan for planting weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and creating faked terrorism attacks in the U.S., as the Council of Worlds allowed this exception to the rule of non-interference. So the plan is not tracking well, but it has not changed. One can see that the plan involves assets, the protection of assets, but it also includes avoidance of rioting and rebellion and panic in the masses. This is what they fear. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "What They Fear," written September 2004. We have mentioned that the establishment fears losing their perch on top of the pile and being reduced to the stature of the common man. They fear, primarily, a sudden panic in the masses to the extent that they leave their jobs and the infrastructure collapses, as maintenance is not done on power grids or water mains, and security over corporate assets is not maintained. Opportunistic looting, which catches like wildfire when it becomes apparent that security is lacking. The police or private security forces distracted by their own panic. Military sent in to quell riots becoming brutal, as they have frankly been trained, creating in the populace a rebellion beyond panic that sets the common man against the establishment, a class war seething under the surface, boiling and not settling. Stock markets collapsing under sudden sell orders in an effort to liquidate cash, and banks unable to meet the demands that bonds and savings accounts be liquidated, so the financial system is no longer considered functional, and squatters' rights begins to prevail as the mindset of the masses. Military units or militias becoming breakaway units, such that rogue states are formed, the world in the main becoming a no-man's land, where the safety of the elite cannot be assumed or assured. The wealthy elite, and those in power when the big lies are exposed, becoming targets of those who have long resented them, with more than focused looting and retaliation unleashed as starving masses of humanity become organized. The power of the elite no longer recognized when it's reduced to paper ownership no longer enforced by the courts, and control over police and military forces no longer listening, and consisting of paper money no longer having any value in a barter-driven economy. To counter these possibilities, the establishment has desired a firm date when sudden and unexpected earth changes would occur that might throw the populace into a sudden panic, and the ability to close stock markets and banks in such an event, and to impose martial law to prevent rioting. These steps were viewed as stopping the erosion of power and wealth by substituting fear of punishment in the minds of the populace for their sense of self-protection and opportunistic greed. Well-timed martial law would supplant what the elite fear with a controlled setting, where travel would be prevented and jobs attended to by force, with workers returned to their jobs by gunpoint if necessary. Thus, the power and water utilities would work, and food distribution would continue. Looting would be reduced greatly by curfews and travel restrictions, and the wildfire effect would never ignite. Brutal military techniques would not incite rebellion, as torture would occur behind doors, not in the streets, and the organization needed to incite rebellion unable to occur due to curfew and travel restrictions and selective arrests of likely suspects. Access to stock markets and banking would be controlled so that the system never reaches collapse due to liquidation demands it cannot meet, and the population feels they must continue to honor their bills and obligations, as the monster lives and has not died. Spearheaded from central commands, martial law instituted to encompass all possible militia units would prevent breakaway by exposing such maneuvers. A unit on its own can break away. A unit required to check in and coordinate with others finds this option exposed and thus inhibited. The infrastructure of power and water utilities intact and supporting an intact financial system, the political and thus the legal system is likely to prevail and not collapse, and thus fear of the courts could be used to prevent retaliatory acts against the wealthy elite. The status quo continues. Paper money and deeds and stock ownership of corporations still has the strong arm of the law behind it. And the common man sees the fist above them, uneroded, and continues to walk in the ruts of their workaday world, despite new dangers such as earthquakes and a tottering and wobbling earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. If the establishment seeks to reduce panic in the masses, this requires a tight control over the media. And if they hope to use the military to control rioting or panic in the masses, this requires control over the military. How is this control enacted? The control exerted by the puppet master and their puppets differs, as the puppets are replaceable and react accordingly. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Muzzling the Media, written December 2004. Those perpetrating a cover-up or cooperating with a cover-up have a mix of agendas. Those who ordered the cover-up in the first place want to posture themselves for optimum profit in the aftertime. They know what is to occur, they can plan, and this is an advantage they do not want to share with the common man. The wealthy elite and those in political control of governments have advantage in knowing and can shelter their wealth and ensure their control in the aftertime, whether at gunpoint or by virtue of food stores that the starving will be desperate for. Land, oil reserves, and healthy slaves willing to work for food are commodities upon which kingship in the aftertime is to be built. This is the plan, as we have repeatedly stated. What will cause this plan to fail is the lack of certain timing on events, as martial law called too early is revealing, and called too late is ineffectual. Political control of assets, such as a military, is ephemeral, replaced periodically by vote or coup, and the military of these political units thus easily put into a breakaway posture. Even shattering into smaller units under the control of this or that officer as communications falter and divided loyalties create clashes. Originally anticipating being kings in their regions, instituting martial law to form select work groups and gleaning undesirables out to starve to death or exterminated in some manner, they are anticipating being abandoned by those owing only temporary loyalty to political leadership who can no longer provide perks or punish rebellion. Terrified of this precipitous drop and hoping for a different outcome, the puppets are resisting a breakdown in the cover-up. Where does this leave the second level in the cover-up, those cooperating because they've been told it is a national security issue to prevent panic and looting and the like? The puppet master, who controls ownership of the media, is issuing instructions to start debate on the cover-up, leading to comfort with the subject, so when serious discussion needs to be before the public, this has a smooth transition. The Bush crowd is threatening all manner of abuse if the cover-up is not maintained. End of the quote. National security is the bludgeon used to control discussion on the coming pole shift, whether theoretical or by revealing the truth about what NASA and the major observatories have in their sights. Planet X, parked near the sun and slowly coming our way, creating increased quakes and storms and volcanic activity. Those working at NASA and the major observatories take a national security oath, and major media is simply told certain subjects are not to be discussed. National security. Don't create a panic. Want to be whisked off the Gitmo for being some kind of a threat to the nation? It is this kind of threat that will make the cover-up over Planet X so difficult to break, as those in the media would rather be safe than sorry. Fiction, such as the many disaster movies, or discussion of ancient prophecy and how the earth changes seem to be lining up with such prophecy, is a route that is open, however. Another means of control, and mid-level individuals not at the top of the heap or at the very bottom, is pedophilia. In short, blackmail. This has permeated the halls of power in the Catholic Church, is rumored to have been used within the U.S. military, and is rumored to be used against politicians in the U.S. and U.K. up to the very top. Pervasive. And I quote from Wayne Madsen, dated February 18, 2005. Ganongate, which is only now being mentioned by the mainstream news media, threatens to expose a potentially damaging GOP pedophile and male prostitution ring dating back to the 1980s and the administration of George Herbert Bush. Ganongate is reminiscent of a huge political scandal that surfaced in Nebraska in 1989 when it was learned that Lawrence King, the head of Franklin Community Credit Union in Omaha and a rising African-American star in the GOP, was a kingpin, along with top Republicans in Nebraska and Washington, D.C., including George Herbert Bush, in a child prostitution and pedophilia scandal. Last year, a senior source on the Washington Times editorial staff, the same paper that broke the GOP pedophile scandal in 1989, linked White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove to gay activities involving top Republican political strategists in Washington, D.C. End of the quote. And here's the Zeta tape. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Pedophilia Power, written April 2005. Secrets have power in that knowledge empowers a man. Societies that hold secrets thus have power, at least in their own minds. That power can be vaporized if a single member of that society blabs, or so it is feared. Thus, to be initiated into the society and to be privy to secrets the society holds, one must be owned in some way by the society, and this is best accomplished per the minds of those heading these societies, which can lean in the direction of sadistic control, by blackmail. Is a bit of hanky-panky sufficient, a la Clinton in his thong panty episode? Hardly. Simply breaking laws, a lack of business ethics, or questionable accounting practices, or theft of ideas, or operating outside the spirit of the law, none of these suffices as an absolute preventative. It is pedophilia, with absolute proof of the participant's involvement, that is considered the premier blackmail means. The Catholic Church holds the secrets of Fatima, the third secret, which will never be revealed as Lucia has died. The hierarchy, those at the top of the church, are not without shame themselves. The reports that initiates in Skull and Bones are required to disrobe and engage in shameful acts with each other have long circulated, without substantial proof, but are true. It goes far beyond this initiation, as those who pass the initial tests are invited to parties, and out come the boys to be fondled and passed around. All this, the reactions of the initiates, are recorded not only in the eyes of those attending the parties, but also on film. Just being present during such a party and not objecting violently puts one at risk for blackmail. Why do they not report this to the police? These networks are exposed occasionally, as in the Gannon episode, where as a male escort, Gannon was a favorite in the Bush Press Club and rumored to be a confidant of Karl Rove, a male who disdains the company of women. How extensive are these pedophilia blackmail clubs, and do they permeate all levels of power in government and industry and the church? Not as extensive as is imagined, as few actually cooperate. Those who leave the party promptly have not given any blackmail material to those filming the situation, and those moving into power are not uniformly from this club either. Threats of assassination, threats to maim or torture a loved one, threats to bring down an enterprise beloved and treasured, bribes to enhance a personal fortune, bribes to ensure legislature is enacted or contacts granted or investments arranged. All these are tools for those who wish to ensure their secrets are kept and cooperation assured. Nevertheless, when Catholic pedophilia is protected at the highest levels and homosexual favoritism is exposed within the Bush White House, it is clear many in power are members of this club, hold secrets, and have sold their souls, in essence, to be a member of this club. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. So if the tools are from the top, use of wealth to control corporations and countries via their national debt, and control of the media by ownership of the media as corporate entities, and use of the military to guard assets of the wealthy and control the threat of rioting, and bribery and intimidation and blackmail where needed to meet these goals, then what are the tools to be used directly against the masses, the man on the street? Poisoning, for one, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Contrail Plan, written December 2001. Contrails are an experiment of the wealthy and powerful to see how much deliberate infection of the wandering masses might slow them down. This has been allowed where practiced because the experiment was couched in terms of crowd control. Those allowing this to continue, the military and national security groups, were assured that only temporary illness would occur. However, the intent of the elite was scarcely temporary illness. Imagine elite groups settling into North Carolina estates, or in valleys in Utah, or in Wyoming. Why would they want masses of the lower class, starving and angry, invading their communities? There would certainly not be food or supplies enough to go around, and these elite do not think of the populace as anything on an equal basis to themselves. Their logic is that if these starving hordes are to die anyway, the sooner the better. Thus, when the time came, what was being sprayed upon the starving, wandering hordes would scarcely be temporary germs such as flu. They are to be poisoned. Will this actually occur, going into or after the shift? The assumption on the part of the perpetrators is that the status quo, in runways, in motion in the air, in gasoline supplies, and in willing workers, will remain as today. This is so far from the truth that we predict that none of these operations will be up and accomplished as planned. During the week of rotation stoppage, there is so much discombobulation that all jobs get neglected, and complicated operations that involve many steps and few people have a built-in broken link problem. A single individual meant to pass a message to provide poison at the appointed place or time can create failure. Thus, where this is the plan, this is not expected to be the occurrence. The target is clearly large urban areas of poor and restless folk, such as L.A., for instance, where riots have already occurred. Analyze the contrail spots today. Militia groups, large cities, and routes the wandering hordes might be likely to use. Stay away from those areas prior to the week of rotation stoppage, and you should have scant worry from this source. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Blockades is another plan, to blockade the common man in coastal or river basin cities where they were drowned during the shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Blockades, written February 2003. Many in the elite, which encompass the wealthy, the powerful, and those who have forced themselves into government, are concerned about controlling what they term the mob. They watch what is happening in Venezuela, in Argentina during the bank failures, and the anti-Iraq war protests in the U.S. with horror. The mob is out of control, or about to be, in their opinion. How to ensure that the elite, the inner circle of wealthy and powerful, continue during these times in control? In smoke-filled rooms, in those private after-meeting chats that the power mad have with each other, these issues come up. They have determined that to retain power worldwide requires a few steps that absolutely must be taken, not missed. We will list them as some of the illogical behavior of the power mad become clear when these steps are considered. The first, containment. This is not in regard to Iraq, but in regard to the most worrisome threat, the mob. The elite live in wealthy suburbs, estates, penthouses, and those they consider their slaves live in ghettos, poor neighborhoods, trailer parks, or in third world country mud huts. In a pole shift scenario, where commerce between countries and overseas will be stopped, the issue is keeping the mob in their setting and preventing them from attacking the elite in their enclaves. Thus, containment means keeping them there until the bridges fall, the quake-crumbled buildings fall upon them, and injury and infection take them out. The chemtrails were to poison them, young children, the most innocent among them. Until the U.S. forces that would be required to enforce the chemtrail poisoning learned of this and balked. However, preventing escape from cities by bombing bridges, disrupting train schedules, and thus limiting the exodus of the poor and underprivileged from city ghettos, is now planned. However, like most plans of the elite, subject to being countered. Next, enslavement. This plan requires that those healthy and talented among the survivors, not the elite, be placed in a position to become enslaved. We have in the past warned against moving to locations offered by the government or the wealthy elite for jobs or work, requiring the family mainstay to move or relocate. A promise of a job only upon relocation or relocation of the breadwinner is suspect. Why is it necessary to move in order to offer jobs to those devastated by the fast bankrupting economy? A man or woman removed from family and friends is likely to be pressed into forced labor because they have no choice. Who would they turn to as an alternative? Quit and move in with friends temporarily instead? Thus, these offers should be viewed with suspicion and declined. Next, defense. This requires that the elite live in enclaves that are not only in safe areas, but are defensible. Often, the elite have moved into such areas where fences and armed guards or security are present. But after the pole shift, when electronic monitoring will be down, and guards presumably distracted by their own family distress, these are not adequate. Thus, the elite have planned getaway estate locations, such as the estates we have mentioned in North Carolina. These are guarded by ex-military, ex-CIA, or mercenary types, already hired, whom the elite presume will be their servants throughout. Not thinking, of course, that these mercenaries will have other plans of their own when they see there is no reason to honor their current masters. The mercenaries, of course, will take over and not be gentle about it. Now, given these three pieces that must be in place for the elite, for the pole shift, what is likely to happen? Containment is already planned in Indonesia, in Britain, in the U.S., in Australia, but requires a terrorism threat in order to get the military or police or civil units to cooperate. Thus, these units, in the main manned by the common man, with family and friends and loyalties not necessarily in line with those of the elite, are already suspicious. Given an order to blockade a city, prevent exit, and institute essential martial law, they would at first obey, but then problems would set in. A blockade only works when it is entirely enforced, and breaches create an exodus that counteracts the blockade, as now those contained are enraged. Thus, we predict that early use of this tactic will create awareness of the tactic, so that later requests for enforcement are poorly implemented and fail. Enslavement has not as yet been implemented, as the economic situation has not become so dire that the elite are willing to admit to this and make such offers. We predict that by the time the elite get their act together, they will be overtaken, time-wise, by the approach of the inbound Planet X and not find any takers in any case. Quite the opposite. They will find that they have bunkers, guarded encampments or estates without workers, and will in fact find themselves pressed into this service by the mercenaries they have hired. Defense, thus, will more quickly turn upon them, such that their defenders become slave masters, and not lenient in that regard. Thus, should this scenario play out at all, the public will see false terrorism or riot control exercises, blockading the public from exiting their essential ghettos, the poor neighborhoods around the world. Reaction to this will most likely get some media attention, but the faces to watch are not those of the poor prevented from leaving. The faces to watch will be those of the elite, who will look worried outside of any personal threat to themselves. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The perfect excuse for a blockade is a pandemic, biological warfare threat, so those in the city need to be quarantined. Note the timing of a Bush executive order to quarantine in the case of a bird flu outbreak, 2 weeks ahead of an attempt to cause a pandemic with a known pandemic virus, the 1957 bird flu virus. And I quote from libertypost.org, Bush authorizes use of quarantine powers in case of bird flu, April 1, 2005. President Bush signed an executive order on Friday authorizing the government to impose a quarantine to deal with any outbreak of a particularly lethal variation of influenza now found in Southeast Asia. The fatality rate among those reported to have contracted the disease is about 70%. And another from NewScience.com website. And another from the NewScientist.com website. Pandemic causing Asian flu accidentally released. Dated April 13, 2005. The virus that caused the 1957 Asian flu pandemic has been accidentally released by a lab in the U.S. and sent all over the world in test kits, which scientists are now scrambling to destroy. The flu testing kits helped pathology laboratories improve their accuracy. The 1957 pandemic started in China before spreading worldwide, killing an estimated 2 million or more people. And another from ABC News. Feds at loss on how flu strain got to labs. This dated April 14, 2005. Federal officials are still at a loss to explain how a potentially deadly strain of influenza could be sent to more than 4,000 labs around the world. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is operating under the presumption that the H2N2 strain was purposely included in the panels designed to test the lab's proficiency in identifying viruses. End of the quote. Why was this necessary? Because the current bird flu virus is not passing human to human at the rate expected. It lodges deep in the lungs and does not cough readily, therefore will not cause a pandemic. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Pandemic Threats, written April 2005. Bioterrorism has become the boogeyman because it is convenient to contain the populace. Suddenly, should martial law or its equivalent be desired. The Bush administration has run a number of tests to see whether this or that plan or technique might be useful, or to test the gullibility of the American people. We've mentioned the shelter-in-place tests, which failed to prove useful as a directive to the public, and the Terry Schiavo test, which failed to dismantle the balance of powers between the branches of government, allowing a Bush dictatorship to prevail in its place. The Patriot Act, supplanting civil liberty checks, has met resistance in many communities and is no longer in favor. With the military in revolt behind closed doors, the Bush administration has only those powers given it by the executive branch, primarily the Homeland Security outreach. What would allow Homeland Security to force the residents of cities to remain in place, to shelter in place, selectively? Infection, affecting those neighborhoods likely to riot and not housing friends of Bush, could be quarantined. Vaccinations, again selected to enhance illness among those not deemed fit for the work camps of the future, could likewise be focused. All that is needed as a catalyst is a pandemic, a worldwide threat, and if nature does not cooperate, then a nudge can be provided. Notable in the recent revelation that a proven deadly virus without natural immunity in the world's populace was released on purpose to thousands of labs in dozens of countries worldwide via standard mail routes is the lack of uproar about this calamity, the lack of major media attention. Notable is the fact that this release came from a U.S. lab. Notable is that Bush recently signed an executive order authorizing quarantine in the case of a bird flu epidemic after the release of this 1957 virus and prior to the discovery by the public that the release had occurred. To those who fear being poisoned or contained in camps, we would point to the earth changes which will overtake those in power long before any planned pandemic can be initiated. Germs will be contained by disaster. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. What does the establishment want for the aftertime? Compliant workers, a healthy work camp, and to get rid of what they consider useless eaters, the old, the sick, and the very young. The plan is to select out the best workers, skilled and young and healthy, and entrap the rest for starvation or to be poisoned or drowned. Plans for a renewed draft in the U.S. read like a wish list for the establishment based on skill set. 18 to 35, both men and women. This is not a military recruitment. It is creating a worker base in camps to be fed and protected while the rest of the citizenry is killed off. This includes, for the U.S., guest workers from Mexico. And I quote from ZetaTalk, Guest Worker Program, written April 2006. What is the Bush plan for the U.S. citizen when the pole shift hits? Poisoning soft city dwellers used to social services as they struggle from the coastal and river basin cities. Forcing them to stay in these cities under quarantine or shelter-in-place orders, or blockade them there so the force of water we have predicted during the pole shift will cause them to drown. Infecting the poor, crowded into rundown neighborhoods and suffering from inadequate malnutrition and lack of health care, so they become the brunt of a bird flu pandemic, dying by the millions. The point of this? To have a worker base, a slave labor base that is young and healthy and unlikely to complain. Early plans for a draft during the days going into the Iraq War called for men and women 18 to 35 with many skills. This was to be a worker base, not a soldier base. Selecting out this base into camps along with healthy and compliant unskilled workers from Mexico would form the slave camps of the future. The rest would be poisoned, drowned, sickened, or starved. Thus, the guest worker program was long planned to facilitate the flow of workers from Mexico to the U.S. It has run amok of the press to preserve U.S. jobs, creating conflict in the political base Bush needs, the GOP, as reality has come home to the GOP. Another setback for Bush. End of the quote from ZetaTalk. If one cannot just leap into the situation where work camps are established and the undesirable killed off, what to do in the meantime? Well, tag citizens, requiring an ID that is fail-safe so they can be selected out when the time comes. Thus, outside of the wrestling match between the puppet master and his puppets, the drama to control the masses is not much in evidence in the public eye. A bird flu pandemic appears unlikely due to the nature of the H5N1 virus, which settles deeply into the lungs rather than in the throat where it can be coughed about. And attempts to spread the 1957 virus have been stymied. The guest worker program is stalled, and a draft by Congress highly unlikely, as the Iraq War is so unpopular. Contrails no longer sicken as they did in the early years, but the severe earth changes anticipated going into the shift are still ahead of us, and these plans may become unsheathed and attempted. Thus, the common man should be alert and aware.
Hello, I'm Roger, president of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.